What's up, everyone? Welcome back to Between the Tackles. We are at episode 56. We got a special one for you here. Our boy Hogan, my boy Hogan is not here, thank God. I mean, he likes to light me up when he's here and I'm not. Good riddance. Good riddance as far as I'm concerned. I'm just kidding. I hope he's having a good time doing his little trip that he's got going on. Manish, you're back again as always.
I'm doing great. I see a familiar face in that other box. Yeah. Can't remember. I can't put my finger on who he is.
I mean, I can't say I'm happy. I can't say I'm sad. We'll see how this goes. We've had some adventures on the podcast before. Former host of the podcast here, Between the Tackles, formerly Breaking the Plane when this guest was here, Mr. Joe Scherr. Welcome back. It's good to finally catch up and see you and talk some football with you.
Nothing I like more than nostalgia, and this is hitting all of the boxes right now. This is so good. I'm so amped to be back. Not going to lie, been tuning in pretty regularly in the last, I would say, 5 months? I love what you guys are doing, putting Hogan on the ones there and having him host, dude. We were just talking about it before we came on. What a great host, what a great voice that is. So I'm just amped to come back on with you guys, spit some fire for a little bit, and then duck back into the shadows where I belong.
Well, yeah, so you'll notice I'm sitting here in the one spot, like Joe just said, and I'm not as good as Hogan at that. And that's the only nice thing I'm going to say about him today on the podcast. But we got a good one in store for you. We're going to get into the NFL. We're going to talk some documentary stuff that came down that we touched on last week a little bit. And we'll get into our lovely pick segment, which no movement this week, Manisha. No movement this week. We all tied. So yours truly still at the top.
Yes, I'm fully aware of that. You made that abundantly clear before we came on here.
But all right, let's get into this. So we talked last week about the new ESPN 30 for 30 documentary involving the New York Sack Exchange and Mark Gastineau and his confrontation with Brett Favre and how awkward that was, that a grown man is still holding a grudge 20 years later. And I did happen to watch this last night. I know you guys haven't. We talked about it before the episode here, but I was very entertained by it. So if you get a chance to watch it, I highly recommend you go and watch it. As somebody who hates the Jets, watching a documentary about a good era for the Jets was something I was a little skeptical about. But hearing these guys talk, the four of them, Lions, Klecko, Salam, and Mark Gastineau, talk about their experience on the defensive line of the New York Jets in the 80s was kind of fascinating. But there was one thing during this episode that was said to me that I died laughing and I could not believe it was true. And that was Mark Gastineau coming out and admitting that somebody took a dump in his sandwich and he still took a bite of it. I couldn't believe it. I was honestly floored that kind of stuff was going on.
Did he know there was a dump in the sandwich before he took a bite?
I would hope not. I would certainly hope not. But like, as the documentary went on, because that was told to us pretty early on in the episode when they were interviewing him, but you find it come to show, like, the guy was kind of a loner. Like, he was an outstanding athlete, outstanding defensive lineman, had the record for sacks for a long period of time. But he was a loner. Nobody really liked him. He had a lot of issues with his teammates, even the guys on the defensive line. I had no idea about that watching this episode. And hearing how that line was basically divided between Joe Klecko and Mark Gastineau and taking sides, I was kind of floored by that. And, you know, seeing Mark Gastineau talk, I don't know, Manish, if you've ever talked to him in the past or seen any of that, but very, I don't want to say immature. It doesn't, may not be the right word to describe where he's at, but he is definitely a very selfish guy when it comes to, you know, the football and, you know, getting his, he wants his, you know, he saw Joe Klecko go into the Hall of Fame. He's wondering why he's not in the Hall of Fame. I kind of am too. We should be there. But in your interaction, did you recognize that at all? You know, with him and the way he acts?
Well, I didn't know him as a player. You know, I spoke to him several times over the last 10 or 15 years. But yeah, he has a reputation of being a selfish player, a terrific player. I'm in agreement with you that he should be a Hall of Famer. My understanding all along was that I think his teammates tolerated him because he was such a exceptional talent, and he delivered on Sundays. There was also, I may have mentioned this last week, he was dating Brigitte Nielsen at the time, in the early 80s, mid 80s. She was a high profile actress, and you're just talking to people who covered the team back then. I think that Brigitte Nielsen maybe showed up to practice a few times. That's kind of the life that Gastineau lived at that time. Is he bitter? Is there residual bitterness? We talked about the sack record and Michael Strahan. Clearly there is in that respect, but I'll be really interested to see the documentary at some point. But just a dominant foursome when you talk about the defensive line with Marty Lyons, Salam, Klecko, and Gastineau. It's a shame when you have such a dominant line like that. The fact that they could not even get to a Super Bowl. I think they get to a conference championship game, maybe during a strike short year. I believe that group went to two play. That group of four went to two playoffs. Ultimately, they didn't win at all. They actually had a pretty good offense in a couple years in those early 80s, but they couldn't finish the deal. But they don't just have a flashy nickname at the Sack Exchange. Incredible nickname, by the way. But they were the real deal. Probably two Hall of Famers on that group, even though there's officially only one. But Joe Klecko, Joe Klecko forever as well. But to answer your question about Gastineau, immature, I don't know. I think mercurial is probably a good way of describing him. Really a hard guy to figure out. My interactions with him were he was a very thoughtful guy, kind of compassionate guy. But again, this is 20 some odd years after he was done playing.
Yeah, you bring up the strike shortened season. He was, I think, the first one to cross the line too for the Jets.
He had
spoken about how one of the teammates, I want to say his name was Guy Bingham, if that name rings a bell, actually spit on one or two of the guys that were crossed. Like as they were going through to go to play, I think Gastineau got spit on by this guy. And that's actually what made Marty Lyons cross the line and go back and play. He's like, you don't treat somebody like that. Like that's
right. Right, yeah.
And learning about what Marty Lyons did, outside of football and all the great things that he did, it was almost like such polarizing personalities right there. You have one guy who seems like one of the most selfish guys ever, like won the Man of the Year award, was doing all this charity work outside of the field, seemed like a really good teammate. And then you had Mark Gastineau, who was a very selfish player, was all about himself, about getting his sack. They made comments about if it wasn't the quarterback, he wouldn't go after to tackle him as hard, stuff like that. But moving on, Joe, did you happen to see the clip of Gastineau and Brett Favre interacting with each other at that memorabilia show? We talked about it last week, but I want to get your thoughts on it.
I did, and I I listened to the pod last week when you were talking about it. Now, so I have kind of a more unique view, and I think it was you, Bears, you brought up how kind of the circumstances in which that Strahan got his last sack. I think that the way that Gastineau reacted is framed by his history of not being the most amicable guy. Do you get what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So I think if it was somebody else, maybe that didn't have that maybe had a more benign past about that thing, that maybe it would have been taken in a different light. Because I do think he has his point. I listened to this podcast called Zero Blog 30 on Barstool. It's a military podcast. I'm not in the military or anything like that. I just find their view on geopolitics in the world very interesting. And they have this segment called Good Initiative, Bad Judgment, and it's like something that is good. You have the what you're doing is good, but the way you do it and the way you execute it and the way you go about it is horrible. And I think this is exactly what that is for Mark. Because I understand what he's saying. Strahan knows he's retired. Isn't it that what it was? Strahan, they know kind of Strahan's retiring. It was the Jets that Favre was playing on in the game. They called a bootleg to that side and basically gave him the sack record. Not saying that he doesn't deserve it or anything like that, but in that frame of if I'm the guy you're passing, I'm probably not pumped about that. You know what I mean? So ambushing him at, like, it was a charity event, right? Ambushing him at a charity event? Yeah, probably a horrible look, especially in this day and age where anybody can grab a clip and put it on and put it online. Even if, like, that could be in the middle after – they could have started that video right after Brett Favre said, too bad, buddy, F off. You know what I mean? And took it totally flippantly. But, like, that you know what I mean? Now I'm making shit up. But, like, what I'm saying is like, I get where he's coming from. Like, yeah, that kind of sucks. But I think that how he went about it and his past of, like, how he's kind of conducted himself, definitely, like, to put those two and two together, you have smoke where there's fire. You have fire where there's smoke.
And it almost seemed like it was contrived. We talked a little bit about it last week about how, like, okay, they were filming the ESPN 30 for 30. They knew Brett Favre was going to be there. It was like they set up to get that footage. Like, part of that was there. I feel like
production sets up to get that footage, and they know that they're putting the tinder in the powder keg. You know what I mean? They're like, you know what I mean? It's like reality TV when they do all this, like, friggin' 16 and pregnant and shit like that, and they force the baby mama and the guy to go sit together on the couch and have the discussion in front of it. You know what I mean? It's kind of that same kind of thing. But, like, dude, he was, like, pointing in his face and, like, leaning and I don't know. Like, his
it was
body
awkward.
Language, his body language was not like, ha ha. You know what I mean?
Brett Favre was very uncomfortable with that interaction.
Yes, he was.
Yeah, Brett Favre is like an upstanding citizen, so he totally doesn't deserve that. That's why, like, I'm kind of like, I just kind of don't care. You know what I mean? It's just like, oh, something bad happened to a bad guy. That kind of stinks, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. Well, if you haven't seen it, go check it out. The New York Stock Exchange. It's on ESPN Plus on their app. You can get it. It's about an hour long. I thought it was a great watch, so be sure to check it out. I do want to move forward to the 2024 NFL season now. We could stop talking about the history, but this week we got some interesting quarterback news in the NFL. Obviously, we're at the end. We're nearing the end of the season. Teams that are eliminated are making changes with their quarterbacks, and one team in particular still right in the thick of a playoff spot hunt. It's the Atlanta Falcons, and they've decided to bench their $180 million quarterback that they signed this offseason in Kirk Cousins in favor of the 8th overall pick in this year's draft, Michael Penix Jr. And when we had our draft show, Hogan and I were live on this, and when Penix was drafted by the Atlanta Falcons at spot 8, we were floored, like, just completely stunned that Atlanta made that selection after giving Kirk Cousins, I think it was $90 million guaranteed on his contract. So him going to the bench while the Falcons are still fighting for the NFC South divisional spot, at very least a wild card spot, was definitely stunning. Manish, you have any thoughts on this benching?
I'm surprised, just given where the Falcons are in the NFC South race. They're only a game behind in the loss column to the Buccaneers. So it almost feels like they're giving up on the season, which doesn't make much sense given that they're only a game back and there's still an opportunity for them to make the playoffs. You know, you're tearing the keys over to a rookie quarterback. What do you expect over the last three games? Even though Kirk Cousins has struggled, you know, they beat the Raiders the other night, but you know, he didn't play nearly his best. I just think it's odd that this late in the season that they would make this change. If this was happening, you know, midway through the season, I could get it. Even if you were, quote unquote, in the mix for winning the division, I could still understand it. But I can't recall a situation where a veteran quarterback who you paid a lot of money to, but, you know, an established veteran quarterback got benched for a rookie this late in the season when you're still in the hunt to make the playoffs. That to me was an eye opener. You know, in a vacuum, I get it. Cousins hasn't played particularly well. You want to see what Penix has over the last three games, but they're not out of the playoff hunt. So I'm not exactly sure what Raheem Morris was doing. It opens up, you know, a litany of questions about what Kirk Cousins' future is. You know, as you said, you know, he got a monster deal, which is essentially $90 million or so in guaranteed money, $100 million. He's scheduled to make $37.5 million next year, or I guess $27.5 million, but he'll get $10 million fully guaranteed for 2026, a few days after the 2025 league year begins in March. So they need to make a decision. What are they going to do with him? If they cut him, they're still on the hook for the money, minus whatever a new team pays him, which you would assume would be the league minimum. They've invested a lot of money for 14 games in Kirk Cousins. If they just did not sign Cousins and drafted Penix, that would have been the better course of action for their short and long-term future in hindsight. Doubling down didn't make a lot of sense to me because I don't think you can divorce yourself from the fact that you're paying a veteran quarterback this much money. At the end of the day, Penix might be good. They hope that he will be. But I really do think they botched this scenario by giving Cousins so much money and then cutting bait, you know, less than the full season.
I think I saw something that if they cut him, they end up with like a $67.5 million cap hit, dead cap hit for them. And if they trade him, they're going to end up with like a $28 million dead cap hit. So like at the end of the day, like no matter which way it goes,
yeah,
they're going to hit that.
I just don't
plus see the money that they paid him this year. So
I just don't see how, like, so we're talking about, we've talked about a million times about how you can like maneuver the salary cap or like these deals however you want. You're telling me that nobody was, you couldn't, like everybody else on the market was giving Kirk Cousins money, guaranteed money 3 years into a deal off an Achilles injury. I don't think that's, I don't know. I think this is classic owners having a little bit of cap room and a little cash and a little bit of like, I just think it was an overstep. And I think that, I don't know, Manish, you can put the brakes on me, but I mean, there has to be some kind of practice performance or the fact that he's 25 with five and a half years of college under his belt, that has to be some kind of saving grace here or some kind of merit pointing towards starting him. Whether, and it's not like Kirk Cousins is playing horrible for the entire season. Yeah, he had a couple bad games, but he's putting you squarely in into the playoff race here. So I really don't, I didn't get the move when they signed him. I didn't get the move after they drafted Penix, and I still don't get the move now. So there has to be, I don't know. I'm not the smartest guy in the world. There's a lot of smarter guys than me, but I'm not banking on those people being the Falcons front office.
Even if Penix were playing well in practice, you can't really definitively tell. He's probably running scout team. It doesn't matter. He hasn't played in a regular season game, so there's going to be a learning curve. And he's only got three games left, and these are three pivotal games if you actually want to make the playoffs. Maybe the Falcons don't really care about making the playoffs. I, that, to me, is like confounding. I do not understand when you're still within striking distance, one game back with three games left, why are you turning it over to a rookie quarterback who has never started a game in his career? Like, not even like earlier in the season. You know, Cousins missed a couple games and Penix played. I mean, that didn't happen. So I think he just played some mop-up duty. It's really odd to me that they would do this so late in the year when they still, even though I don't think it's going to happen, when you're 7-7 and the division leader's 8-6, you forge ahead and you see what happens over the next three games. You don't just reverse course, cut the cord on a veteran and go to a rookie. I don't understand it. I mean,
and the thing
even
is,
if someone explained it to me, I wouldn't get it.
The only team that makes the playoffs out of the NFC South, barring something crazy, is the winner of the division, right? You have Tampa Bay on their last leg of a window, right? I mean, yeah, they have Baker for 2 years, but Godwin's out for the season, right? Broke his ankle or whatever. Mike Evans is on the last leg of his career. He's fighting to keep his 1,000-yard streak alive. So, like, I think that there could be benefit. I think there would be almost more benefit to making the playoffs, preventing the Buccaneers from getting in the playoffs, pushing them closer to a rebuild, and then you now have a young nucleus, because even though if it's Kirk Cousins leading that, you still have Bijan Robinson and Kyle Pitts and Drake Lund. Those are young pieces that are now getting playoff experience, important game experience by making the playoffs, not to mention the fact that you kick your rival or your so-called rival Tampa Bay out of the playoffs and send them closer to a rebuild. So I don't know. I just – you as soon as you said the fact that, like, they're 7-7, and the league leaders, the division leaders, 8-6, and the division leaders, Tampa Bay. Like, I don't know. There's more. There should be more at play than just trying to play the young guy when you have guys on that team, like with non guaranteed money next year, who need to make a living. You know what I mean? I just don't think it's a good idea at all.
For me, it's like, okay, well, what is Raheem Morris doing? I know he's been a head coach before, and, you know, going back in the offseason, Atlanta chose Raheem Morris over my guy, Bill Belichick. And it's like, well, is Raheem Morris making just an ill-advised decision for this? Because, you know, you got to think that the owner had to be involved in this decision with the amount of money that he's invested in Kirk Cousins and the standing of the team, right? So for me, like you, Manish, I can't wrap my head or understand why they would go to a rookie this late. Because you not only are you at risk of missing playoffs, you're now at risk of damaging your eighth overall pick quarterback. Like you're risking, you know, his development. You're not really setting. You're putting him in a pretty big spot, and you know if he blows it.
But you also, you're also putting his development over the betterment of the other 52 men on the roster.
Right.
That too.
So yeah, I mean, are you trying to get
under the gun? And that decision also puts the other 52 guys under the gun.
Yeah, I'm sure these guys on the team are not happy. Even if they love Michael Penix, the guy hasn't started a game in his career, and there's only three games left. What are you expecting over these last three games? He's going to have his fair share of bumps and bruises. I mean, you've seen it with Drake May. You've seen it with all these guys. It doesn't make any sense. So if they were two games back with three to play, I would say, okay, fine, they're waving the white flag. They're one game back with three to play. Why would you think that you don't have a chance to win the division?
I can't wrap my head around it. But let's move on to some other quarterbacks that got benched this week too. And these teams are completely out of it. Will Levis benched in Tennessee for Mason Rudolph, and Jameis Winston benched in Cleveland for Doran Thompson Robinson. I got it right this time. Manish, do you think Winston or Levis are done with their opportunities to start, or do you think that we'll see either one of them potentially starting in the NFL next year?
Well, I think that Will Levis is done in Tennessee. I know that Brian Callahan came out and said it doesn't necessarily mean that Will Levis is done. They just need a spark. You know, they're 3-11. What kind of spark are they going to need at 3-11? So that to me is just coach speak. And I like Brian Callahan a lot. They're done with Will Levis. They will be looking for a new quarterback, whether it's through the free agency, the draft, who knows, because right now they're picking sixth if the season ended. So they're not going to have a chance at Sanders or Cam Ward. I don't know how they feel about the other quarterbacks in this class. More likely they'll get a stopgap, a veteran, like maybe one of the guys we're going to talk about next, which is Derek Carr, maybe even Aaron Rodgers. Yeah, I mean, I just don't think that Will Levis has any future with Tennessee. This benching to me is clear indication of that. Jameis Winston, Jameis Winston is who we've always thought he was, which is, you know, an exciting player to watch, extremely turnover prone. I don't think he's going to curtail his turnovers. You know, he spoke this week about continuing to pursue his dream. He's been around the league for a long enough time for me to conclude that he will not be the starting quarterback for the Cleveland Browns. Can they retain him as a backup? Potentially. I think in all likelihood, he probably goes elsewhere in the offseason. No real future in Cleveland. The turnovers are just too much. For as exciting as he has been over the past month, and for some of the, you know, exciting moments, exciting win or two, at the end of the day, the backbreaking interceptions are too much for a coach to endure. Believe me, because I've talked to coaches who have coached him.
Mr. 30 for 30, as our good friend Hogan likes to call him, 30 touchdowns, 30 interceptions his last year in Tampa Bay. Joe, Manish mentions Derek Carr, unlikely to play in New Orleans for the rest of the season due to injury. Is he going to be back with New Orleans next year, you think?
See, this is like I just don't get the Saints, dude. They're in cap hell right now. So I don't know what Carr's contract looks like, and that could be one of those situations where they're almost like gun to their head, have to have him on the roster next year. So I'm not 100% sure with that stuff. But I think the Saints are in a unique position where if you plugged a elite quarterback in there. I'm not talking middle of the road guy. I'm talking elite. If you plug an elite quarterback into that system, you could probably get some unreal production out of him. You have some weapons on the offense. You have a decent defense, at least a decent front seven. So I don't know. I just, the Saints are one of those teams where they're just like, when they're not good, they're so far off my GD radar because of like how hapless of a franchise they've been like the majority of my life. But dovetailing off the Saints, dude, I think how bad the Saints have been with middling quarterbacks, how good the Broncos have been with Bo Nix, kind of like blows a hole in a lot of Drew Brees' greatness, I think. My personal thing
that's
come across my desk recently is I think that if you can get – dude, Sean – all right, listen here, dude. Listen, before
that's a hot take.
Before we go crazy, here comes the heat
mind. Do you mean future Hall of Famer Drew Brees? Is that the same guy you're talking about?
I'm not saying he's not a Hall of Famer. Dude threw for 5,000 yards, dude. I totally get it. Do we remember the five – was it Teddy Bridgewater, the five-game stopgap where they went 5-0? And the dude was like Pro Bowl caliber numbers. Like, no, it was Jameis Winston. He had winning five games for them. So like, I just I don't know. I think with the Saints now, dude, I think they have to figure out how to get into the top like five and try to draft a quarterback. I don't know if this is the year to do it. This might be the season where you draft a left tackle a year early, or you draft a high caliber wide receiver a year early, and you try to go back in and you sign the worst quarterback you can find and try to go back in the next year. But I don't know. Derek Carr is obviously not the answer. That team has some pieces. It's not as young as you want to be, and they're in cap hell. So if you're a Saints fan listening to this podcast, dude, I'm sorry, dog.
Well, moving away from the bad quarterbacks and the injured quarterbacks and the benchings, I want to talk about a team that has a good quarterback but has absolutely nothing else. They have absolutely nothing else, and that is our New England Patriots. And I want to talk about this game that we saw last week down in Glendale when the Patriots traveled there to play the Arizona Cardinals, who are, I think, still fighting for a playoff spot. They're in that tough NFC West division, with the Rams and the 49ers. Patriots coming off a bye. We're accustomed to teams being ready coming off the bye up here in New England. And this team was an absolute dumpster fire. They lose 30-17, and frankly, I turned it off because this is a waste of my time. I was so mad that this game was at 4:25 up here in New England, and I could not watch the Bills Lions game. That was the game that I wanted to watch. Yeah, me sitting here saying I want to watch the Buffalo Bills play football. Damn, right,
that must suck.
Like right, like watching this game. I'm gonna get real triggered here, man. This coaching staff, and I was like, we've talked about it on this podcast, Manish, as you know. I was a big proponent of giving Mayo another year. No matter what, don't turn into this team that fires their coach after 1 year. Get this staff out of here, man. Get them out. I've seen absolutely nothing from this staff to make me think that next year is gonna be any better. Like there's literally no like potential that I see out of them. Usually you can cling to one or two things with a coach and be like, okay, he's earned a chance to improve on that in year two. Nothing. On top of that, after the game, when the team was clearly not prepared, not ready, the defense is in shambles, the offense looked inept too. You got Kayshon Booty handing away interceptions. Like, literally. Gerard Mayo sits here and throws his offensive coordinator under the bus at the press conference in the post game. Screams dysfunction. Joe, you're a fellow Patriots fan. We've disagreed a lot on a lot of the things that the Patriots done over the last 2 years, but I know that you agree with me on this. What is your take on the state of the Patriots where they sit right now?
First, I want to clarify, it was Teddy Bridgewater who went 5-0 with Sean Payton with that crappy Saints team. But anyway, but Burge, I think the thing with me and you is our overarching like point when we try to make it is usually pretty close to the same. But the minutia as how you get from point A to point B is usually completely different. Like last year, we both agreed that Bill did not need any GM duties. But I went away from you when thinking the coaching staff. Obviously, I was wrong in thinking that Mayo would have any kind of improvement. But I'm done, dude. And I think that you said something very telling when you were in your diatribe to kind of kick off this segment of the show. I would be okay with giving Mayo another chance if I saw progress throughout the year. If I saw them go from a timid team in the beginning of the year to a team who is playing with house money at the end of the year, going for it on a lot of fourth downs, going for a lot of twos, like being aggressive, playing that aggressive style of football that gets your team bought in. And I don't see any of that. I don't see any continuity between him and the coordinators. he said the other week that he was involved in the defensive side of the ball. Dude, you shouldn't have said that because that's even worse. It would be better if you were hands off and the team sucked. And then you're like, you know what? Next year, I'm going to be more hands on with the defense. Now there's something we could look to, or in the last couple of weeks, we could look to and be like, oh, Mayo was more hands on with the defense and X, Y, and Z got better. No, it all sucks. And Manish and I talked about it on the live, the pre-record that we're going to release on Sunday. And it's like, there's no like, Mayo doesn't, like, you can see it, dude. You can see it, dude. This team has had Parcells in the building. They've had Carroll in the building. They fired Carroll for Belichick. Like, that's the – these are the people walking through these halls. The Crafts, they should know, dude. They should know. They should see it. Nothing has gotten better. No situation, situational football, position group, overarching 30,000-foot view. Besides putting Drake May in, if you don't put Drake May in – it's even worse. It's even worse.
They've got one win.
But, the wins and losses don't matter. The team looks fucking uninterested. I'm sorry.
You're okay.
They look uninterested. They don't come out ready to play. They don't have any attention to detail. They're one of the most penalized teams in the league. That hasn't gotten better. Those things haven't gotten better. You're still getting false start penalties on very crucial downs. You're still getting multiple offensive pre-snap penalties on drives. Like, they're killing themselves. And these are all derivatives of bad coaching. They're all poor coaching. They're all things you can bring from poor coaching. And I cannot get behind giving this guy a second shot. And it sucks that they gave him a 5-year deal. It sucks that Mayo went, that Kraft went down there. I think it was the Bengals game in the preseason said this dude was my handpicked guy. All of that stuff is going to be tough to get through. But what's best for the actual football team is to clean effing house, rip the Band-Aid off, and get people in there who actually know what they're doing and they're experienced in what they're doing.
I will say that the only coach that I am okay sticking around right now, and I've kind of come around a little bit on this because I was not in this situation 2 weeks ago, and that's Alex Van Pelt, but not as the play caller and the offensive coordinator. I think he's done a fantastic job with Drake May's development to this point. Again, Drake May deserves it.
I'm okay with Van Pelt saying if they change the CEO head coach. I'm okay with that because I think that if you change the CEO head coach who knows what he's doing, who can tell Van Pelt, hey, we have a 6'4" freak athlete at quarterback. Please run the ball. You know what I mean? If they have Mayo and Van Pelt, I'm out on both. You know what I mean? But if they can change one of the two, I might be back in. I'm sorry for stepping on you there.
No, you're good. You're good. I think he would be a great quarterback's coach. Just sit there, coach the quarterback. Don't call the plays. You're not running the offense.
It's a tough coach.
It is. He was like their sixth pick to be their offensive coordinator too. So like, he's not, they're not like married to this guy. I think Mayo kind of is at this point, but like, we both agree, get Mayo out of here. Manish, are we off base or are you coming around on this take two to get this guy out of here?
Yeah. I've been of the belief typically that you don't want to change out head coaches, year after year. The Crafts have obviously stuck with one head coach for a generation. So if they do feel like they erred in hiring Mayo, then moving on from him wouldn't be the worst thing in the world, because you would anticipate that this wouldn't be the start of a pattern. It could just be a one-off. You make a mistake. The hardest part is the ego of these owners. And if Robert Kraft can get past that and admit that he made a mistake and move on from this head coach and hire someone who he and his son believe in, then I would not be opposed to it. Joe, you had mentioned earlier, wins and losses when it comes to Mayo. I mean, when it comes to May, doesn't necessarily matter. I agree with you there. But if you just look at the final three games, the Bills twice and the Chargers, you're staring at a 7-game losing streak to end the season. And if you're a rookie coach who has only 3 wins and you finish on a 7-game losing streak, then, I think it could be warranted, for the owner to move on. If they upset the Bills in one of these games or they beat the Chargers, that's a different story, perhaps. But the reporting locally and nationally, some national people, and Joe, you had mentioned Albert Breer's report about how the last 3 weeks matter. Greg Bedard has also reported that Mayo's job is not secure. So this last month will indeed play some kind of role in the Kraft's decision making. And I can't see, you know, given those reports and given the credibility of those two guys reporting it, if the Patriots do lose three games to finish the season, so they end on a 7-game skid, if they do get their, you know, their asses handed to them, for lack of a better phrase, over the last 3 weeks, then it would not surprise me if the Kraft's moved on.
See, that's a great way of looking at it, because we saw during this broadcast Jonathan Kraft in the box with Robert Kraft, clearly taking notes.
I was just gonna say, I hope you brought
clearly that. Taking
definitely
the notes.
Definitely taking notes.
And you can read his lips, like he's pissed. He was not happy, and you know, you see him sitting there taking the notes, and you know what
real
pops
quick,
into
Burns,
my
I
head.
I kind
is,
of feel like the RKK and Jonathan dynamic would kind of be like me and you watching a Pats game. You would kind of be sitting there like, yeah, dude, this is how it was before you turned four, dude. And I'd be there, being like writing notes down, like this team.
That's a great way of looking at it. But to that point, like, the first thought that popped into my head is maybe we're seeing the transition away from Robert and to Jonathan. I was like, please don't let Jonathan near the football operation. Please don't let him have all this massive say and like be a Jerry Jones type owner. But like at this point, there's no better way. Brady left here bad. Belichick left here bad. It's Kraft's turn to face the music. At the end of the dynasty, give it to your son. He's going to be here a lot longer than you. Let him pick his coach. Let him pick his GM and start this now, because you screw up Drake May, it's going to be a long time before this team competes again. Manish, you had something?
Yeah, I think as long as Robert Kraft is senile, or not senile, I think he's going to have the final say.
He might already be senile.
Well, I don't think he's senile. And I also do think that Jonathan Kraft has had a fairly significant influence over the last, you know, for years. So it's not like he's now just coming into the fold. He's been influential. I know this. He's been influential for quite some time. But Robert has always had the final say. And I wouldn't anticipate that changing, honestly, unless there's some kind of health issue, God forbid, that props up. I think Robert Kraft is in it until the end, frankly.
Hopefully Jonathan Say picks up a little bit. Last question I want to ask you, Joe, before we move on to some actually good football teams to talk about. Patriots are pretty locked in the top three of the draft right now, and I don't foresee that changing, if not improving. I have an opinion of what I want them to do. What do you want them to do?
All right, so Manish said something to me on Sunday that legitimately automatically got the Crisco sponsorship broken out. So I'm going to tell you what I wanted, and then I'm going to tell you about Manish's Crisco take. So my original plan was, so let's say they pick at three again, right? This draft is rich in tackles. So you trade back from three, you get more assets in this draft, you draft a tackle, and then you really attack some other positions of need. But Manish floated a little idea here that was go out and sign T. Higgins and then draft Travis Hunter at three overall. And I said, oh, baby, that sounds tantalizing. Dude, imagine T. Higgins on one side, Travis Hunter on the other side, and then DeMario Douglas in the slot. Hunter Henry at tight end with Rhamondre Stevenson in the backfield. Oh, baby.
Competent play caller.
That's where we're starting, dude. But then it kind of gets to my fact that I just said that it's a tackle-heavy draft. Maybe you can get somebody at the top of the second round, maybe the bottom of the first round, trade up a little bit to get a legit left tackle. Then you go hard at the interior of the offensive line through the rest of the draft. So I like that idea. I love that kid out of Arizona, Tet McMillan, too. I think he's a legit guy. I think he's closer to T. Higgins than Travis Hunter is. So I think you can kind of match it up there. If you don't go out and get T. Higgins, I would like them to draft a guy like Tet, who I think could be like a legit outside X number one receiver. But I think if you go out and get that guy on the open market, you can draft a guy like Travis Hunter, who's kind of closer to like Antonio Brown, route runner, speed, inside and out guy. So I think this is now that you have the quarterback, I think last draft was a total whiff besides quarterback, which makes it 100% hit 8+. So you've got the guy now. Now you got to hit. And we were talking, Manish and I talked about the Eagles a little bit, how they've been hitting and hitting and hitting. This is that era. These are the next couple drafts that you have that quarterback under a rookie contract. It's time to hit and spend some money. If they can hit and they can spend some money, then this 3-14, this last couple of years is going to look like almost worth it at that point.
See, Manish, I think you brought that up last week when we talked too, and that kind of swayed me too, because I was going back and forth. I'm like, I'm going to be okay no matter what they do. If they trade back and draft an elite left tackle and get picks, great. They draft Travis Hunter at 3, awesome. But thinking more on it, this team has been so devoid of any kind of high level elite talent for so long. Like, you're talking even towards the tail end of when Tom Brady was here, they were missing it. They didn't have it. And getting a guy like Travis Hunter, who can play both sides of the ball, I don't believe he's going to do that at the NFL level. I think he'll play primarily on one. But could they use him a la Marcus Jones, where he's primarily an offensive player, but he has a package on defense where he goes out there and he plays defense for certain plays of the game? I think that would be fantastic if they get those types of gadget players. You could do things with it. You're seeing the Patriots finally doing it with Marcus Jones this year on offense, where he has some packages, some plays that are schemed for him, and he rips off yardage like nobody's business. So I'm in the ballpark where I want to take in the best player.
Up the sidelines this week.
Yeah.
When he just like outruns 3 guys to the boundary, takes off for like 18, 20 yards up the sideline. Just a simple swing pass. Yeah,
exactly. So getting a guy like that, I think, is the primary focus. I think they could sign veterans to stop gap. If they had to wait a year for an elite tackle, I think they could sign a veteran. I don't have the list in front of me, but they left plenty of money on the table this year with veteran guys on the market to come in and at least be better than Viridian Lowe has been at the penalties this year. That said, he's exceeded my expectations despite that. But I'm done talking about bad football. I'm done. At risk of going off on another diatribe, I got to move on. I got to move on to the
Robert Kraft, you're lifting. Rip the effing Jonathan Kraft. You're probably closer. Like, rip the effing Band-Aid off. Just rip it off. Get it done. Don't have 4 coordinators in 4 years like Mac Jones. Rip it off. Get a real head coach. Get a real play caller. You have the diamond in the rough. Just go spend some money. Go, dude. Everybody will love you again. I promise. Even if you just try, and it's not that great, but you just try. It's fine. Sorry.
We're done. We're done with the Patriots before we risk losing this episode to the Patriots. I'm not doing it. So we have the AFC and the NFC playoff picture. We had the marquee matchup with the Bills and the Lions last week, which, you know, injuries aside, and my hatred for the Buffalo Bills aside, I want that to be the Super Bowl. I think that would be the most entertaining game for this league, given the talent on both teams and the fact that neither of them have actually won a Super Bowl. I think that would be a great storyline for the NFL, and sign me up as long as Buffalo loses. But we'll see what happens. But, you know, I want to first start off with the AFC, and Manish, I'll throw it to you. Patrick Mahomes got pretty dinged up this week. They came out and said that he is week to week with his ankle injury. He took a pretty good hit to cause that to happen. Are the Chiefs in danger of losing their one seed? You know, because from where I sit, Mahomes hasn't been great this year, and this team has continued to win. And, you know, in the most ridiculous ways any possible, if Hogan was here, I'd probably be sending him on a diatribe right now about the Chiefs. So are they at risk?
No, they have a 2-game lead on the Bills with 3 to go. They'd have to completely collapse over these final 3 games to lose the one seed. They've got, you know, a relatively difficult schedule. Their easiest game is probably the Texans this week. Then they got the Steelers and they finished with the Broncos. So these are 3 playoff teams. So it's not like they got cupcakes. That being said, I don't know how hurt Patrick Mahomes actually is. You know, I know that there was a report that he was week to week, but yet he's listed as a full practice participant this week. So we've seen this from Mahomes before. I don't know if he's a quick healer. I don't know if his injuries are maybe exaggerated a little bit after they happen. One of the two is definitely the case, because you're not a full participant in practice if you're week to week. You're not even practicing on a limited basis if you're actually week to week. So I wouldn't anticipate him playing this week. I don't think it makes much sense. But I'd frankly be surprised if he didn't play against the Steelers in a week and a half.
You know, it seems like it's just fitting that storyline for the whole Mahomes gutting out an injury to win his third straight Super Bowl. Yeah. Like,
and look, I mean, he's tough. I don't want to say he's not tough, but I think a lot of the times his injuries get over-dramatized for some reason. He doesn't even need it. He's, you know, obviously the best quarterback in the NFL right now. He's a future Hall of Famer, multi-time Super Bowl champion. I just don't think you need the excess drama about how miraculously he overcame an injury. He probably has an ankle injury. It's probably mild. And like I said, maybe it doesn't make any sense to play him this week, but if he's listed as a full participant in practice this week, I would anticipate that he would play next week against the Steelers. And depending on where things stand in the standings, play against the Broncos if needed. But I think that maybe this injury has been exaggerated for whatever reason.
Joe, you look like you're aching to say something.
Well, I think the reason the injury is so played up is he's got to play 3 games in 10 days, right? So he's got to play Sunday, Thursday, then Sunday, or Sunday, Thursday, then Saturday, or something like that, or something
Christmas.
Like that.
Yeah. Play on Christmas. Yeah.
Yeah. So there's that element set in there. And I think, Burrish, forgive me for going back to a Patriots analogy here, but this feels a lot like 2006 and a lot like 2018. Like, this feels like a lot like a team that is – so quarterback-centric that he needs to be perfect no matter what. You have nobody on the outside that can really make a legitimate play, and it's all kind of in between the numbers, can be bottled up pretty quickly. I'm not saying that they're going to crash out here and not going to like go far or anything like that. I'm just saying that the injury to Mahomes, the actual lack of talent there, I just don't – I think everybody's fear-mongering a little bit with the Chiefs. I think they've won a lot of close games because they have the best coach-quarterback combo since Brady left the Patriots. So, yeah, I just – the Chiefs are going to be the Chiefs until Patrick Mahomes and Reed isn't there anymore, but I just don't think – this doesn't – it just doesn't feel like that this is the team. You know what I mean? It just doesn't – there's a lot of variables, I feel like, with the Chiefs, and And they've been able to run the ball a little bit recently, but I just something just doesn't feel right there. They feel like a team that's ripe for the taking. I'd love to see an up and coming team go in there and punch them in the mouth on divisional week. I really think if you jump on them early and force Mahomes to throw it 40, 45 times, I really think that's how you're going to beat this team, which sounds crazy. You know what I mean? But I think that's really how you're going to beat this team. Get up on them early, force them to throw 40, 45 times, get on that offensive line. That's it.
And I know Manish feels that way. We talked quite a bit about it and thinks that they're going to be bounced. Yeah. That divisional round, they're going to be gone. But Joe, I want to stick with you. We're going to move to the NFC, and we're going to talk about one of our favorite teams from last year, the Detroit Lions. And they've been outstanding this year, but they have been absolutely ravished by injuries. The latest one in the loss to the Bills on Sunday, David Montgomery. It looks like he's probably done for the year, tearing his MCL. Are you concerned about the Detroit Lions prospects for their Super Bowl, given the injuries? And who do you think is going to end up winning that tough NFC North?
I still think the Lions, because we've talked about it. I just talked about it now. I'm a huge QB coach, like combo guy. I think that can mask a lot of deficiencies. I think the Packers are about a year away. I think the Vikings, as currently constituted, don't have the coach quarterback combo that the Lions do. But you never know. They are young and up and coming team. But the thing that always intrigues me with the Lions, dude, is their next man up and like buy-in. So I think that coupled with the coach quarterback combo, I think can get them to a place. I think they're going to come away with the division. I don't see them having the afterburners to kind of get later in the playoffs. I know we really want a Bills Lions Super Bowl, but I mean, if you're looking at the Lions, they're probably going to have to go through the Eagles. And I really don't think – I think the Eagles are, like, perfectly constituted to kind of thwart a injured Lions team with their rushing attack and their defense and kind of how they play football.
Manish, your Eagles got it this year?
Well, look, I thought the Lions were going to the Super Bowl. They were my preseason pick. They were my midseason pick. They were my pick a month ago. But I just think they've been so decimated by – injuries. You mentioned Montgomery as the latest offensive guy, but I think they lost two or three more starters on defense. I don't know how Aaron Glenn, their defensive coordinator, is piecing together that defense. Virtually their entire defense, starting defense, is banged up or has been banged up at different points. They're just leaking oil. Obviously, the Bills are a Super Bowl favorite or contender in the AFC, but the Lions just gave up 48 to them. They gave up 31 to the Packers the week before. I think they're leaking oil, and if they play a dominant or like a juggernaut offensive type team like the Packers, the Vikings, the Eagles, you know, teams that can put up 30 a week, I just don't know how they can make it through the playoffs. I believe that they will squeak out the number one seed, even though the Vikings are also 12-2. The Vikings got to play Seattle, Green Bay, and then at Detroit. I don't think they're going to win all three of those games. I think they'll lose one of those two games. I think Detroit has a much more palatable path to get the one seed. They got the Bears, which they should beat, the Niners, who they should beat, and then they host the Vikings. So I think that – and the Eagles are at the mercy of those NFC North teams. They do not control their own fate. They can win out, and they probably will win out, but they need a couple things to happen to the Vikings and the Lions. Each of those teams has to lose at least one game for the Eagles to sneak up and get the one. So, I'm just talking in circles here because I do not think the Eagles can get to the Super Bowl. I think they're a really good team. I would be fascinated to see if the Eagles travel to Detroit, what would happen, or on the other side, if the Vikings came to Philly, what would happen? No, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe the Eagles will go. It's just when I look at the quarterback play, Jalen Hurts, to me, I'm not on the Jalen Hurts is an elite quarterback, bandwagon. I've never been that. I think he's an average, slightly above average quarterback surrounded by incredible talent on offense. And this season, an incredible defense led by Vic Fangio. So I think they're certainly beatable. Obviously, we say the Lions defense sucks, so they're beatable. The Vikings, Sam Darnold hasn't done it before. They're beatable. The Packers are hot right now, but who knows? Jordan Love is a turnover machine, so they're beatable. I just think those four teams are all kind of in the same bag, and any of those four teams can get to the Super Bowl. It wouldn't surprise me if any of them got there, and it wouldn't surprise me if any of them got bounced in their first game in the playoffs.
It's going to be fascinating to see how that NFC plays out because the NFC is just stacked. It's so competitive. I mean, only three teams in the conference have been eliminated from the playoffs at this point. It's incredible to see that.
Right. And I didn't even mention the Bucs. They're like on a heater. So they beat the Eagles earlier this season. I think they beat the Lions earlier this season.
I was like, didn't the Bucs bounce the Eagles in the first game of the playoffs last year? So I just think, I don't know. I think if the Eagles, I mean, if the reason I said that about the Falcons is because I think that Tampa Bay gets in, they're going to be another tough out again.
Yeah, I totally agree. So that's five teams, really. I said four. There's really five teams that have a legit chance to get to the Super Bowl from the conference. So it'll be fun to watch for sure. But I don't definitively, to answer your question, Bert, I don't definitively think the Eagles are any kind of lock to get to the Super Bowl. I just think that the Lions were the closest thing to a lock before all those injuries occurred on the roster.
It's going to be a fascinating watch. It is. And, like I said, I want Buffalo to get there just to have their hearts broken again in some fashion. I'm a bitter fan right now. Something's never changed, Joe. It never changes.
I just hope they throw their party favors on the field if they get to the Super Bowl. That'd be hilarious.
Well,
are they still doing that?
I don't know, but I hope they do it on a national stage if they get there.
Well, before we get to the picks, I have one gripe that I want to talk about with the NFL, and that's Christmas Day games. I don't have a problem with them playing on Christmas Day. I have a problem with them going to yet another TV provider exclusively for these games. And we're now going to have games on Netflix this year. And Peacock, Prime, cable TV. You want to watch CBS if you're a streamer. You want to watch CBS. You got to get Paramount Plus now to do that. So it's like all over the place. They're forcing me, and I'm a sucker. I'm gonna pay for it because I want to watch the NFL. I'm probably part of the problem when it comes to this, but we don't need another streaming service to watch games. Like, gone are the days where you got to tune into CBS, Fox, or NBC to watch the games. Now you got to have NFL Network. You got to have NFL. You got to have Amazon Prime. You got. I mean, I'm probably sounding like a boomer right now because I'm complaining about this, but I had to get it off my chest. I'm sick and tired of them doing this because it's just, before you know it, every game's going to be, AFC's going to be on this one. NFC's going to be on this one. It's just, all right. I got that off my chest. Let's get to the fun part, please. Let's get to the fun part. We're going to get into the champions race of the Between the Tackles podcast. I'm going to run it today because, again, Hogan is not here. I am not as good as him at this, but let's start off. We're going to break down last week's records for our games. You know, we'll start with Hogan, who's not here. He had the Steelers +5 against the Eagles. That was a loss. The Steelers got destroyed. He had the Bengals -5 versus the Titans. They took care of business. And the Broncos -4 versus the Colts, helped out by Jonathan Taylor pulling the Leon Lett, Deshaun Jackson type, dropping the ball before the goal line. So he brings his record to 20-19 on the year. Manish, you had a pretty good week as well. Cowboys +3 over the Panthers. Easily done. The Dolphins screwed you against the Texans, the team that you hate. That's what you get for bad-mouthing one of my favorite teams. And the Falcons -4. Despite Kirk Cousins playing his way into a benching, they took care of business against the Raiders. My heart let me down again. I started off by picking the Lions -2.5 versus the Bills. That was a loss. I had the Rams +2.5 versus the 49ers. My underdog, that was an easy win. And then the Vikings -7, the big number. I'm not scared. I'm not scared of that when you're talking about the Minnesota Vikings and the lowly Chicago Bears. That was a win. So, Manish, you're at 21-17-1 because of that push you had. And I sit at the top again, 24-15. Wow. So, the way we do this, Joe, on here is we each start off with a pick and we talk about our game and we just go around the horn until we name our three. So I will start us off. And I'll read Hogan's at the end. Just forgot to throw that out there. But I'll start us off. I'm going with my underdog first. It's with one of those teams that I love that screwed Manish last week, and that is the Houston Texans going into Arrowhead to play the Kansas City Chiefs. The Chiefs' luck's going to run out at some point, and I'm riding with C.J. Stroud and D'Amico Ryans to pull that off on the road as my underdog pick for the week. Manish, where are you going with your first pick of the week?
Yeah, I'll go with my underdog pick as well. I'll take AFC North bitter rivalry. I'll take the Steelers getting 6 points at Baltimore. Typically those games are tight, low scoring games. The other thing to note is that the Steelers have won 8 of the last 9 games in this rivalry, including the last 4 games. A little ticked off after losing to Philadelphia last week. I think they'll bounce back. I'm a little shaky on this only because I'm a big believer in the Ravens. And when I look at how the AFC playoff picture shakes out, you know, I kind of think the Ravens could play the Chiefs in the second round. And if they did, I think they could beat the Chiefs. So I'm not exactly sure why I'm picking against them. But, these division games are tough. It was a 18-16 2-point win for the Steelers earlier this year. I don't know if the Steelers will actually win, but 6 points is a lot to me in this rivalry. I think it'll be a tight game either way. Give me a 10-win team that's getting 6 points in a division game.
Love it. Joe.
We're going to go. This is the stinkiest pick of all time, but we're going to go with Cleveland getting 7.5 in a divisional. It's not a divisional matchup. We're going to go. Yeah, no, it is a divisional matchup against Cleveland, against Cincinnati. I think Cincinnati's not going to be fancy at all. I think they're just going to try to win this game. I think this game is going to be low scoring because it's a divisional game. I think anybody getting 7.5, 8 points is a decent bet. So give me Cleveland getting 8 on the road in Cincinnati.
My second pick, I'm riding with another team I'm high on this year. Picking with my heart. That's the theme of this. Minnesota Vikings -3 versus Seattle. Minnesota's rolling. I have come across the bridge on Manish's boy, Sam Darnold. I'm buying him. I really want him to make some noise come the playoff time. If it's not the Lions, I'd love to see the Vikings, anybody but the Eagles out of the NFC. So Give me Minnesota -3 versus Seahawks. You know, Geno Smith dinged up as well. So, you know, I like the Vikings to continue rolling and continue their strong push to the playoffs. Manish.
I'm going to go with the Eagles. Speaking of, they're giving 3.5 on the road against Washington. They beat Washington at home earlier this season in primetime. As you know, Burge, I'm not really a believer in the Commanders, but it looks like the Commanders are going to lock up that 7 seed, and there's a good chance that it could be Eagles Commanders in the wild card round, the first round of the playoffs. Eagles are playing outside of their little hiccup against the Panthers, which they clearly were not up for, playing against such an inferior opponent. They've looked pretty good. Everything I've said about Jalen Hurts, he did play probably his best game of the season last week against Pittsburgh. They threw the ball much more than they had recently. A.J. Brown got involved. Saquon didn't have the statistical game that he's been accustomed to, but I just think they're a superior team to the Commanders. Commanders, to me, again, fringe playoff team. They'll probably end up with the 7 seed, but this is not a game that I think the Eagles are going to be in any real jeopardy of losing. I think they'll win. They'll probably win by a touchdown.
Go.
Stinky, another pick. Give me Vegas -1 at home. The Jaguars suck. The Vegas sucks. They're getting 1 point because they're at home. It should be a pick 'em, but give me Vegas -1.
Not much to say about that one, huh?
There is no statistical analysis. There's no football analysis on this pick. It's a pick 'em at home. Give me -1 at home. Fuck it, dude. Al Davis, cut your hair.
I will say for the listeners out there, Joe did have last pick out of all of these picks. He had to pick the scraps that were left over after Hogan, myself, and Manish. So that's why he's picking these dumpster fire games. He knows what he's talking about. That's why he's calling these dumpster fires. But My final pick of the week, it's a team that we were just talking about in the NFC South, and that's the Bucs. I got them -4 against the Cooper Rush-led Cowboys. I like the Bucs to continue rolling towards the playoffs. You know, given what the Falcons have done, they got extra motivation to continue their push to get there and kind of embarrass their rival the way we hoped, the way the Falcons had hoped that they were going to embarrass their rival. So give me the Bucs -4. Versus the Cowboys as my final pick. Manish, who you got?
Well, I had the Vikes and the Bucks, but you kind of took my picks. But
I wasn't going to say that.
I digress. So, look, winners adapt. You know, they don't complain like I just did. They adjust and they adapt. So I'm going back to the Lions. Well, you know, they're coming off a tough loss to the Bills. As I said, their defense kind of resembles a FBS defense at this point. They're really struggling with injuries, but the good news is that they're playing the Bears. The Bears have lost 8 in a row. Caleb Williams getting banged up left and right, kind of terrible body language on the bench. I can't see any scenario where the Lions do not win this game big. Maybe they take their frustrations out, after losing last week to Chicago. They played earlier this year, tight game. Field goal game. I don't think it's going to be so tight. I think it was a Thanksgiving game the first time they played about a few weeks ago. I think this is a get-right game for the Lions. I do not typically like giving 6.5 points, but the disparity in the quality of team is so much that I'll gladly do so, and I'll probably be staring at a double-digit win for Detroit by the end of the day.
Hell yeah. Go ahead, Joe.
And for the stinkiest pick of all. Give me Tennessee +4 at Indy. Thank you. No further questions at this time.
Joe picked all the games that you would never want to watch this weekend.
I picked three like third string quarterbacks, dude. Who do they? Yeah, you have Mason Rudolph in Tennessee. You have Dorian Thompson Robinson in Cleveland, and then who the hell is starting for the Raiders?
Desmond Ritter, right?
Desmond yeah. Ritter, whose first game action was last week, dude.
Not to mention Mac Jones, the backup, played for the Jaguars. Right.
Hey, not much to scout, dude. Not much out there to scout. We'll be fine.
These are the games. Like if you're on red zone, like Scott Hansen just like flies through it and then goes to the next game. Like oh, yeah, real quick, we gotta show you action from every team when they're in the red zone. But I mean, those are the games. Like seriously, Who would ever watch those games? Those are three. They might be the three worst games on the schedule this week.
Jesus Christ, Manish, I get it, dude.
No, I'm just fucking with you. Look, I'm not criticizing your picks. I'm just saying the games themselves, the matchups are so bad.
They deserve I can't imagine. You're right.
Well, for the final picks of the day, Mr. Hogan, in absentee, has sent his picks. They're not as bad as Joe's, but the dumpster fire games. But the first one he did pick is going to be a dumpster fire game. And he took the Bills minus 14 against the Patriots. He is on record to me saying he expects it to be much more than that. And he's probably not wrong. So his first pick is the Bills minus 14. His second pick is riding another hot team, and that's the LA Rams minus 3 versus the lowly New York Jets. Anytime we can pick, he pick can pick against the Jets, he'll do it. And then the final game, 49ers plus 1 versus
Dude, that's
the Dolphins.
Easiest pick on the fucking board this week.
It is an easy pick, and so we'll see. We'll see if our standings change. See if there's any offers in this one here. Hope not. I hope it'd be great if our first undefeated week is 12-0. Let's root for that this week.
That would be unbelievable.
I hope you guys go 11-1 and I'm the only one.
What are your dumpster fire games? Screws us up.
No, you'll just ask me off the record and say, hey, you guys got a 9-0. You're good.
Joe will be 3-0. The three of us will be 0-3 each. And then Joe will be like, then we'll have like a fourth box on the YouTube channel.
Yes.
He'll have to come back next week if he's undefeated.
Yeah, he will. He's gonna have
I'll submit a select pick if I go undefeated.
Okay.
Well, that's all I got. That's all I got for this week's episode. You guys got anything else?
No, I appreciate you having me on, Bears. Thank you for the invite, man.
Yeah, I did want to say it's great. It's been great talking football with you again. And I hope to continue to do it, continue to collab. You might have some news coming down your way pretty soon here, hopefully. And we'll look forward to hearing that. But without further ado, have a fantastic week, gents. Joe, we'll talk soon. Manish, enjoy. Go anybody who plays the Eagles. Peace.